music and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemon. This episode is produced in partnership with West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
This is the Best of the West, inspiring women with real stories, hosted by West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology.
Hello and welcome to Best of the West. I'm your host, Danielle, and today I'm speaking with Ellen Kinney, who is a Senior Solutions Engineer of Earth Observation Systems at MDA Systems. Ellen joined MDA in May 2018 and develops the technical solutions for software systems and space missions for MDA's customers in Earth Observation and Space Missions line of business. She started her career on the Hubble Space Telescope project as a data analyst, where she participated in three Hubble servicing missions. After 10 years on the Hubble project, she transferred to a role as a software engineer for Goddard Space Flight Center's Ozone Monitoring Instrument, or OMI. In 2006, she left NASA to join Intelsat as the principal engineer and software lead for the Flight Dynamics team. And in 2014, she joined the OSIRIS-REx mission as an imaging scientist, participating in pre-flight calibration of the OSIRIS-REx camera suite and leading the development of its data processing chain. She then joined Google Terabella in 2015 as the payload commissioning lead for the SkySat constellation. Ellen holds a Bachelor of Arts in Astrophysics from Mount Holyoke College. Welcome to the podcast, Ellen.
Thank you, Danielle.
Yeah. Why don't we start with you telling us a bit about what occupies your days?
Sure. So I recently came to Vancouver from the States. And so a lot of what occupies my days right now is exploring Vancouver and the Lower Mainland and just getting to know this really wonderful place.
Awesome.
Yes.
Nice. What does a day look like at MDA for you?
I usually start my days pretty early. I used to be a night owl, and as I've gotten older, I've become more of a morning person. So I'm usually up very early, around 5:30 in the morning. And sometimes I work at home for a little while, or I come into the office. And most of my days are spent really drawing a lot of diagrams and trying to understand what the systems that MDA builds might look like, so that we can take those drawings to customers and say, is this kind of what you would like to see your system look like? How would you like it to behave? Will this meet your needs? Mm-hmm. And so we do, our team does a lot of the forward planning and sketching out what our new offerings might look like.
Very cool.
Yes.
So how did you end up with your current position? I mean, you just said you relocated. That's exciting.
Yes. So one of the recruiters here at MDA reached out to me, and she basically said, hey, would you be interested? And so we talked for a little bit, and then we both sides sort of stopped and thought for a couple of months about it. And then MDA called me back again last February and said, we'd like to talk some more. And so I came up last year for an interview. And after that, it went very quickly. And we decided it was a good match. And I arrived in May, which was a lovely time of the year to come
yes,
to Vancouver.
Yes, it was. It was a good May. So were there any like key events or people in your life that helped you get to where you are now?
Oh, there are so many. I'd have to say, starting off, my mom was a huge support. When I was in grade school, when I first started school, I had a rough start because I'm mildly dyslexic. And so those first few years of school were really tough for me. And so my mom was the one who sort of sat on me and said, no, this is important. You have to do well at school. And I remember coming home from first grade one day and telling my mom, I can't wait for the year to be over because then I'll never have to go back to school again. And that's when she broke it to me that, well, no, you'll be done for the summer, but you actually have to go to school for at least another 12 years. And then she told me she certainly hoped I went to college, and so that would be another 4 years. And I protested hotly that this was not fair, no way. And she said, well, when you grow up, you're going to have a job, and that's going to be a lot like school. And I don't know how this thought occurred to me, but I thought, I'm going to have a job I like. If I'm going to have to do this for the rest of my life, it's going to be not what school was like for me in grade school. And I became obsessed with the idea of what I would be when I grew up.
That's a good, clear vision to have of what you want to do. I mean, maybe not a job title, but something you like.
Yes.
That's good to strive toward.
Yes. So I had many teachers along the way who helped me, who encouraged me, a junior high math teacher who did independent study math, and many, many mentors. I've been very lucky with the people I've worked with throughout my career. So
that's awesome.
Yes.
Nice to be supported. So what has been one of the most memorable moments from your career so far?
Early on, I joined. Which was very exciting because I joined the mission right after the optical flaw in the mirror had been discovered, but before the space shuttle missions to repair the telescope. And so I joined the organization when things were a bit rough. But the good upside of that was I got to participate in several of the Hubble Space Telescope servicing missions, including the mission that repaired the optics for the telescope. And so watching the images, the before and after images of what the still very capable but flawed telescope images looked like, and the improved images were just really a very exciting time to be a part of that project.
Mm-hmm. Were you always interested in space? Was that a thing that you were striving toward?
Yes. So during my early grammar school, when I was very obsessed about what I wanted to be when I grew up, I thought of a lot of different options. And of course, a lot of what I thought about were things like dental hygienist, because, you know, I'd go to the dentist and I'd see the dental hygienist, or, bank teller, because when we went to the bank, there were the mm-hmm. ladies behind the window at the bank. And in second grade, we went to a class field trip to Dow Planetarium in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And I saw this wonderful program with the big projectors, projecting the stars on the dome. And the presenter was a male, but the person behind the console running the projector was a woman. And I, you know, in my 7-year-old brain, in my mind, this woman obviously was an astronomer, and that's what I wanted to do when I grew up. And I latched onto this idea, and I know at that age I had no idea what that meant or what mm-hmm. a career in astronomy or space would look like, but it was something to hold on to. And as I've gotten older, obviously, my understanding of what that entailed evolved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot to be said for the role of role models, especially to young girls. And, you know, oh, I see a woman doing that. Oh, I see a woman doing that. You know, how it occurs to you, oh, these are all options.
Yes.
It's so important to see people in those possible careers. Mm-hmm. So what inspired you to pursue a career in like a STEM field, like and study in that field? Is it just the inspiration to be an astronomer, or was there more to it?
Certainly early on, it was fascination with astronomy, planets, space. I knew I wanted to be in that field. And then as I got to junior high and I started to explore different options, that's when the personal computer started to become available to the public, and our junior high was able to get 3 computers. And my mom actually took a community college class in computer programming, and she would come home from her classes and she would teach me what she had learned in those college level classes. And I got to play on the computers and I said, wow, this is really fun.
Yeah.
And they need computers in order to go to space. So mm-hmm. this was great. And so that was one of the things that, encouraged me along the path to continue pursuing STEM. Yeah. And then, later on in high school, I was the first girl in my high school to take shop classes. And I took basic electronics and I loved it. I loved building things. The class was very project based. You'd come in, you'd do maybe a 5-minute quiz on what we were reading in our textbook, and then the rest of it was all building circuits and learning about all of that. And so I just really loved that.
That's a great opportunity to get to do that.
Yes.
Really good hands-on work.
Yes.
Way to be brave to be that only girl in the class. Not everyone's up for that. So Ellen, do you want to share with us a bit about what your undergraduate studies were like and what that experience was like for you?
Sure. So I attended Mount Holyoke College in Massachusetts in the United States, which is a small liberal arts college. And I studied astronomy and physics while I was there, astrophysics. And one of the great things about my school is that they were part of a consortium of 5 schools, and the schools shared all of the astronomy facilities that mm-hmm. each school had. And so I had 5 colleges worth of small observatories and telescopes and computer labs that I could explore as part of my undergraduate mm-hmm. research and special projects. And so that was just a wonderful experience to be able to use the telescopes at Mount Holyoke and Amherst and Smith and UMass, and that just really underscored to me how much I enjoyed the field and how much I enjoyed the hands-on working with the equipment and writing the computer programs to mm-hmm. analyze the data. And so I really, really enjoyed all of those aspects of my undergraduate training.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, so now we're going to get just slightly negative just for a minute, because the world is not all sunshine and rainbows. And I want to ask about when you come across challenges in your career, how do you handle those? How do you navigate that? How does that impact where you're headed?
I think in general, when I face a career challenge, there are a couple of techniques that I use. One of the biggest is to just sort of look around me and see who are my allies? Who are the people that I can count on who are willing to share knowledge or to trade, work, or, people that maybe have come to me for work, support and are happy to return the favor. Mm-hmm. And that in a lot of cases that helps tremendously. And then other times it's just recognizing that, some challenges you don't necessarily overcome. You just find an alternate path, or you change or adapt what you set out to do mm-hmm. to do something that's similar, but maybe not quite the same. Mm-hmm. And that's a very personal decision. You kind of have to do a cost-benefit analysis and say,
absolutely.
You know, what's the likely outcome? What would pushing through this look like? What would success look like? Are there other things that are close? Are there other things that aren't close that weren't even on your radar mm-hmm. when you first set out, but are new and interesting and maybe a better outcome in the long run? And so you have to kind of remain flexible and to realize that in STEM there are so many opportunities that yeah. if you latch onto one, you might be missing the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great advice. Really good way to approach challenges. All right, let's get a little more positive up in here. What's your favorite thing about your field?
I would have to say, hands down, the favorite thing about my field is that really the sky is not the limit. If you can imagine it, if you can imagine habitats in space or mining bodies in space or working in space, taking images of faraway systems of exoplanets and galaxies colliding. I mean, really, the people in this field, the people who are attracted, are always looking at what is possible. Mm-hmm. What's the next step? What would push the envelope just a little bit further? And that's one of the things I just really love about this. And even when the work is hard or something blows up on you, literally or figuratively, that's the thing. That's the spirit that allows people to take a step back, mourn a little bit, and then say, okay, what's next? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. What can we fix? What can we replace? What's the next path or the next opportunity? And I love that about this field.
Awesome. How would you say that your work is relating to the world at large? I mean, obviously, you mentioned a few applications that are not really yet huge mm-hmm. in our world. But yes. where would listeners come into contact with the kinds of things that you guys are working on?
Well, I think a lot of people don't realize just how much space touches their everyday lives. If you watch television, maybe that program has been delivered to you from a direct satellite link. And if not, if you're actually connected to a fiber optic network, I would bet that the programming was developed elsewhere or filmed elsewhere and then uplinked via satellite to a centralized distribution center. So if you watch the Olympics or CNN or any sort of news program, then that was brought to you by satellites in space. If you go to your local gas station and there's gas for you to purchase, that's because there was a satellite system on the roof that is connected to something that monitors the fuel levels and automatically keeps status of how much gas is available at that gas station to link back to a centralized cool. distribution center. Most people don't realize that. If you make an international phone call, there's a very good chance that a satellite link helped bring that to you. If you turned on the television this morning and looked at the weather report, it was a weather satellite that helped develop that forecast. It's no longer just the cool things, which I love. I love the images from, you know, Mars missions and the Hubble Space Telescope. Mm-hmm. Those are all really wonderful. But yeah. all of that technology that was developed for those missions have found applications in things that touch everybody's life here on Earth, whether that's the weather report or helping farmers understand how their crops are growing, helping, you know, the government understand how the forests are being maintained. It's touched you in some way.
Awesome. As you talk about some of those future applications, what positive impact would you like to see your work have in the future?
I would love to see humans continue to develop facilities in space, both robotic and for humans to live and work in space. I think the potential for what we could realize with having a moon or a Mars-based station. We don't even know actually what that could mean until we get there and we start experimenting. But I think the opportunities for people are immense, and I would love to see that happen.
Cool. Sounds like good ambition. So speaking of, you know, what you're going to accomplish in the future, in the next 5 to 10 years, where do you see your career path taking you, or maybe like where your research is taking you?
Right now, I'm hoping to stay in the Vancouver area for at least 5 to 10 years. And I'm really hoping the near future sees the industry continue to develop all the wonderful Earth observation satellites that help us mm-hmm. understand the world around us, as well as developing the resources and the infrastructure for us to live in space, mm-hmm. to see what comes next after the International Space Station, whether that's a space station around the moon or some other type of facility. I would love to see that be a part of the future.
Awesome. How do you plan for that future?
You plan for that by looking at what technology we have right now, and we've got a lot of that technology already there and available. And a big piece of realizing the future, I think, is figuring out better and more cost-effective ways to do that. And then, you know, how to incorporate that in a way that makes it affordable to work in space, to launch satellites, to get data to more and more people. When satellite missions are big and expensive, pretty much only large governments can afford to use the data from those mm-hmm. missions. And especially for science missions, a lot of that data is sometimes available to the public for free, but not really free because somebody paid for it through taxes and government programs. But as you lower the cost of satellites and you make the access to space cheaper, you make the satellites smaller and cheaper, then you make it possible for businesses to purchase data and help farmers or people who run shipyards mm-hmm. to be able to monitor what's going on in the environment around them to help them make better decisions. And if you make the cost of that data cheaper, they can afford to buy it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the ways you prepare for the future. It's not all fancy, cool, new technology, but also figuring out the business process that makes it profitable and sustainable to be in space.
Mm-hmm. Cool. I like hearing you talk all about space. It's a lot of fun.
Now I want to be in space.
Me
too.
How do you define success in your career? What does that look like for you? I mean, your young self had that very clear mission of doing something you love.
Yes.
But how else do you define success?
I would say for me, success is really defined in seeing teams of people come together to do something that just seems a little bit out of reach. And for me, those are my career highlights, when a team came together to accomplish a mission, whether that was upgrading the Hubble telescope or building an Earth-observing satellite or launching a system or deploying some software. When a team comes together, because it really is never just one person who does that, and works together to make that happen, to me, that's what success looks like.
Nice. I like that definition. So I know you just relocated, so this might not have a final answer yet, but what does work-life balance look like for you? And do you feel like there's a balance to achieve?
Yes, I do. And for me, when I was a younger person, I tended to work lots of hours because I loved my career and it was fun. And as I've gotten older, one of the things I've realized is you can only do that for a short period of time before the brain really starts to get fatigued. It would be like a marathon runner going out and running a marathon every single day. They wouldn't last very long. Mm-hmm. You know, marathon runners, they have a number of shorter runs that they go out and do every day, and they might only run a few marathons a year, mm-hmm. right? Yes. Maybe one a year, depending. And that it's the same with your brain. You can't run the equivalent of a marathon every single day at work. Mm-hmm. You have to do those. You know, you need to steadily put in the 5 to 10 mile runs with occasional, you know, 15 to 20 mile runs, and you know, you save up and you store up your energy for the marathons, mm-hmm. and you are very judicious on when you run those marathons.
Yes, definitely. That's a very good good view on that. What are your tips for dealing with stress?
For me, spending time with friends, getting outside and being physically active, spending a little bit of time outside in nature as much as possible are really helpful for just resetting your brain and your body, and just remembering there's more to this than just what's going on in your head.
Yeah.
Because a lot of this work is very focused on thinking and solving problems, analyzing. Mm-hmm. And to just stop and get outside of your head for a little bit is really the most important thing for dealing with stress.
Good advice. I like the getting outdoors thing.
Yes.
It's quite nice to do that here in Vancouver.
It's best place, yes.
Yeah. All right. So going off of all that wonderful work-life balance chat, what do you like to do in your spare time?
So I read quite a lot. I enjoy cross-country skiing and taking walks. And I travel quite a bit. I enjoy getting out and seeing new places, and whether that's natural phenomenon like going out to see mountains or getting out on the ocean, or also just visiting museums, seeing artwork, that type of thing. Those are the types of things I really enjoy.
Nice. Outside of work, is there like a cause or an issue that you're really passionate about that you put some effort into?
I've put a lot of work in my spare time in animal rescue. And so I do volunteer with animal shelters and help with adopting and placing pets in homes.
Awesome. Yes. That's really great work.
Yes.
All right. Now we're going to start our lightning round questions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Cats or dogs?
Cats.
Ooh. What's for dinner tonight?
I'm traveling, so whatever is easy at the airport.
Good answer. Where's your favorite place in the world to visit?
Wow. There are too many. I don't know that I have a favorite.
What about an aspirational place to visit?
Next fall we're going to Iceland with friends. That's one place.
Yes. Beautiful. Yes. You mentioned that you like reading. What is the book that you're reading right now?
I have three or four on the go. Made to Stick is one that I'm reading right now. What Works for Women at Work, because we're going to read it in book club at work. Usually I read a lot of science fiction, but I realize I don't have any science fiction book on the go right now.
Well, clearly you need a number five.
Well, one of my absolute favorite books that I reread from time to time is The City and the City by China Melville. So
nice. There we go, getting all of our book recommendations.
Yes.
If the walls fell down around us and you were suddenly on a stage and had to perform at a talent show, what would you do to wow the judges?
Oh, wow. I don't know that I do improv. One fun thing is, though, when I worked at Goddard Space Flight Center, they actually had an employee welfare association, and they have a drama club.
Ooh.
And so the joke for the team, the group, is that we have more engineers per square actor than any other amateur theater group in the world.
Amazing.
And the group does a couple of productions a year, usually a musical in the fall and a drama in the wintertime.
That sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. And so when I used to belong to the club back when I worked there, I did a lot of work helping prepare costumes and things like that. And once or twice they managed to persuade me to even walk the boards myself. So
Nice. All right, one more. If you could travel back in time, what period would you visit?
I don't think I would want to travel back in time. I would want to travel to the future.
You're not the first to say that. It's a good answer. I like it. All right. You have survived the lightning round.
Excellent.
Okay. So as we finish up, Ellen, I wanted to ask if you had any advice for the next generation of STEM professionals.
Yes, I would say probably the most important thing you can do is to reach out to other people and to develop partnerships and work friendships as much as you can. That will help you in so many ways, because nobody accomplishes anything by themselves. It's really teams of people working together and coming together for a common cause that really are able to succeed and to achieve great things.
Mm-hmm. Very good advice. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Danielle. It's been a pleasure speaking with you.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to keep up with all the latest news on women in STEM, you can visit us online at wwest.ca. There, you can subscribe to our bi-weekly newsletter, connect with us on social media, and more. From everyone at West Coast Women in Engineering, Science, and Technology, thanks for listening.
The Sexual Violence Support and Prevention Office, SVSPO, offers confidential support, advice, and referrals to SFU and FIC community members, including students, staff, and faculty who have been impacted by sexual violence and misconduct. The SBSPO is a welcoming place where you can access support without judgment or assumptions. We work from a survivor-centered perspective, using an empowerment and trauma-informed approach that considers individual situations and perspectives. Please reach out. Services are located at the Diamond Alumni Center, room 014 on the lower level. Please reach out by email